Your Money Replay from Money FM 89.3. Read with Michelle Martin on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Today we're talking about a book, a debut novel, in fact, called Delayed Rays of a Star, and it's about actresses in the 20th century. Well, we're talking to a Singaporean author, Amanda Lee Koh. She is best known for her Singapore Literature Prize-winning short story called Ministry of Moral Panic. Now, let's go back to this book, Delayed Rays of a Star. The book is set in Berlin, Beijing, Los Angeles, and Paris. These were exciting cities back in those days, the 30s and the 40s. Well, still today, to a certain extent. Well, the story follows the interconnecting lives of three actresses across the 20th century: Marlene Dietrich, Anna May Wong, and Leni Riefenstahl. When a photographer captures the actresses in one frame at a party in Berlin in 1928, they must be in flapper costumes, no one realizes the extent of which their lives will reflect the tumultuous decades to follow. Up-and-coming German actress Marlene Dietrich then crosses to the Atlantic to find fame and wend her way into Hollywood as one of its lasting icons. After establishing her position as a filmmaker, Leni Riefenstahl watches her fame turn to notoriety following the defeat of the Nazis in Germany. And the world's first Chinese-American star, Anna May Wong, playing bit parts while dreaming of breaking away with her father's modest laundry business. But in 9.5 times out of 10 films, the side characters played by Anna May must die so that the white male lead can return to his white paramour on screen. This sounds very familiar. The book is about women in the 1930s and 40s who refused to do what society expected of them, and how this murky world of film and fame and how these women navigate and the choices that they will have to hold up to the test of time. We are speaking to the author Amanda Lee Koh, Delayed Rays of a Star. Welcome, Amanda, to Your Money. Amanda, first of all, where did you get the idea of writing this book?
So I think the idea came quite organically when I saw this photograph of the three actresses together when they were young, when they were just ingenues at a party in Berlin. And I saw this picture actually in a book that I came upon in a used bookstore in New York. It's The Strand.
The Strand.
So I think when I first moved to New York, I was still, you know, sort of enamored of these sort of landmarks of the city, mm-hmm. and I would hang out there. And I think the idea of used books to me, it allows a certain sort of, non-curated approach to book browsing that I think you don't get in a typical bookstore. And so I was there, and I had been looking actually for another photo book, but I came upon this Eisenstadt book. I actually brought it, and you can look at it.
Oh. We'll have to. You can pass that to me, and I'll look at it, so I have more things to ask you about your inspiration for this book.
Yeah, so whilst I was browsing it, I came upon that picture we're talking about, mm-hmm. inside, and I had been familiar with Marlene Dietrich since I was a teenager, I mean, which is fairly atypical, I guess, of a Singaporean teenage girl growing up in, you know, Southeast Asia.
She's very popular for her quote, and I can never forget this one. It says something about, I don't characterize my sexuality.
Because at
that time, she was, ahead of her time, I think.
She was definitely very much ahead of her time. And I think she says a lot of pithy things. And like, I think one of them was, darling, the lakes aren't so beautiful. I just know what to do with them. Or mm-hmm. she also gives out like sort of strange housekeeping advice on how to sort of clean your floors. And also, I think there's one about, once you forgive your man, never reheat his sins for breakfast or something. So, yeah.
She was quite a character back in her mm-hmm. days. All right, going back to your inspiration for this book. So you saw this picture.
Yes.
And then you just formulated the story.
Yeah, so I had been familiar with Marlene. And I guess for Leni Riefenstahl, I feel that a lot of us generically know as Hitler's darling who would go on to do those propaganda films. But mm-hmm. at the point in which this photo was taken, it was 1928 in Berlin, and none of them had actually gone on to be the stars that we know them to be today. Mm-hmm. So Marlene was still, she was actually just like a cabaret girl, you know, playing for bit parts and trying to get famous at that point. She hadn't moved to Hollywood yet.
She hasn't developed that character
exactly
yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in fact, she's actually a natural, like almost a brunette, like a dirty blonde. Mm-hmm. And she was, you know, she was just not so sculpted. She's not like that image that we know of her today. And so I think I was very drawn to this idea of these ambitious young women on the cusp of fame, but not yet knowing sort of what they could go on to be. Mm-hmm. And so I think I wanted to explore how we could use historical fiction in a way that could delve into their lives prior to them becoming these cinematic icons.
So you talk about this book as historical fiction. Mm-hmm. What sort of research did you have to go through mm-hmm. to find out exactly what they were doing? And how did you write that in to make this book a lot more exciting for today's readers?
Yes. So I think for me personally, I don't know how you feel about historical fiction.
I love historical fiction, yes, yeah. But when you read it or you watch it in a movie or a TV series, you start wondering, did that really happen
for
or
sure.
did they do that for artistic purposes?
Yeah. So I think in historical fiction, which is not typically sort of a genre that I personally was super into, I mm-hmm. think I wanted to look at it in a way in which it wasn't too tied to, I mean, I need to have my facts down. But I also didn't want to become bogged down, sort of the details and to have that then kind of weigh down. I need to have the veracity for the book, but I also need to have the fantasy to kind of make the book come alive.
Right.
Yeah. So I think what I did was that it took me about 4 years to write this novel. And I think for the whole of the first year, I simply was a sponge being very absorbent to all this research that I was doing. And I mean, I think, of course, you have the biographies of the women, but I was also looking at like very simple things like how much would a loaf of bread cost then? You know, sort of what sort of stockings were in fashion at that point? What sort of haircuts were in vogue? What were people reading? You know what I mean? I need
so
to have
you
like
you need to live at that time in your own mind
yes,
to
yes.
be able to write this book
I do
as
feel
you
so.
See it.
Yeah, yeah, because it's not like an anthropological approach, you know what I mean? It's almost, I almost have to be able to be walking down the street in Berlin in the 1920s to mm-hmm. then sort of refract it within a work of fiction. If not, it's just going to be sort of a reportage or like sort of a fancied up biopic approach.
So how do you do that? How do you put yourself, mm-hmm. so this, you wrote this book in what year?
Wow, what year are we in?
When did you start when you saw this picture? I'm looking
yes.
at right
so
now.
That was 2014.
2014.
I think.
So how
end
do you
of 2014.
Put yourself in yeah. 2014, 2015, 2016 into the 20s and 30s?
So I think
it's a lot of imagination mm-hmm. and in your part.
Yeah, but I think first and foremost, I actually, despite my sort of physical millennial appearance, I have a very old soul inside.
Well, mind you, I think this yeah. picture that inspired your book, mm-hmm. they were probably back then the millennials.
This is true.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm looking at them now and they, well,
yeah.
quite mature for their age. But back then,
yes.
you know, when you're in your 20s or 18 yeah. and 19, you're already very mature.
Yes, for sure.
For women, especially.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it's also sort of, you know, coming at the research mm-hmm. and being enriched by that, but also sort of using my own experiences as a young woman mm-hmm. and transposing that onto these women from that time. Because I think that in a way sort of concerns, as in the ages have evolved, but the concerns in a way
are the same.
Yeah, they mm-hmm. can be the
until
same.
Until today, I
yeah.
think. Were these women back then fighting back the way, well, you have the hashtag MeToo movement mm-hmm. today from Hollywood and all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
How far did they take it, or were they more willing to say that this is part of the path that I have to take
right.
to get to where I'm going?
Yeah. So I think that it's interesting because I think that identity politics has evolved in a way that has given us language with which to discuss all these issues, which back then, and I think without sort of the language and the theory, it was more difficult for women to push back.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, but they found their own ways to work with and against the system. So I think for someone like Marlena, who was just, you know, like very brazenly bisexual and sort of not really concerned with her reputation, she just took it in her stride mm-hmm. and might even have been the one to be making these advances. You know what I mean? So I feel like as in...
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Because
so.
I see her as you mentioned, mm-hmm. like somebody who would work the system to her advantage.
Yes.
I have this sexuality that mm-hmm. I can pander on both sides and I'm going to make it work
yeah.
for me.
Yeah.
Are there any lessons that you learned from that book that you think people today might be able to learn from and mm-hmm. take advantage from these people who were pioneers of their time?
So I think what's complicated is that in a way they all had to be complicit with systems, you know, respective to their own situations. And of course, for someone like Leni Riefenstahl, it gets very messy in terms of how she was embroiled with the Nazi party and wanting to produce those propaganda films, but that she saw as art films. And Anna May Wong sort of grappling with these bit parts. And sort of facing racism that wouldn't allow her to shine. And I guess Marlena, in a way, was the one who was able to express herself most clearly. And I think she just went about things in her own fashion, and she sort of remade herself within her own molds without really fitting in to anyone's idea of what she had to be or what a woman of that time
should
had
be.
To
so
be.
She didn't want to be, well, put in the box, so,
yes.
so to speak.
And I think she did succeed in stepping out of that. I think the lesson that I have learned most is probably just about, you know, finding your own ways around a system and sort of rising through that in a way that's so completely your own that you can't actually be boxed in because, like, those lines don't exist anymore.
I am so happy to hear that from a young person like you to realize this, which is what many people should realize, I think. Now, going back, Anna May Wong was then an Asian Chinese-American actress. Today, when you look at Asian Americans are fighting for in the United States, it's about representation in pop culture, in movies, in TV shows. Back then, she didn't have this one. She was on her own and making it work for her. This look that she has as a flapper girl, you know, made it, she became, well, in a way, an exotic person to look at on screen.
Yes.
And that worked to her advantage.
It did. So I think it's interesting because I feel that she was both at the same time willing to play into certain stereotypes that were difficult to fight off at the time because she was literally...
It's still difficult to fight off at this time.
For sure. So imagine almost 100 years ago when she was the first ever Asian American actress. You know, no one has gone before her. She was a pioneer in her time. I think that she was incredibly brave, but also at the same time, as she was playing into these stereotypes, she did begin to speak up about them as well. And I think this sort of paradox was quite interesting to me because at the same time that, you know, you're willing to go with the system, you also realize the injustice and you try to speak out against it even as you're playing into it. So I think her psyche, for me, it was a lot to sort of get into because at the same time she's playing the system and but also trying to resist it.
But this is how people succeed in getting to do what they want to do. You need to play the system to your advantage, not to anybody else, but to get work for you. And sadly, you know, even back then and till today, the representation for Asian Americans in pop culture is still not as... It should be. They're still playing into stereotypes for many, in many ways. So what other similarities did you see or what other things you think that happened back then in the 20s, 30s and 40s that should have changed today but didn't? Did you address that in your book?
Well, I think for any sort of, I mean, this is a novel that's populated by these strong women. And I think that it was interesting for me to portray sort of instances of misogyny that would have been clear to sort of readers or just as in women going through their lives today. But at that point, I think maybe it was seen more as there's a certain sort of patriarchal hierarchy that is just part of your lived experience as a woman. And sort of, I guess, it's interesting to think today how we are still, in a way, marked by accepting sometimes those sort of boundaries as what is expected of us as we move through the world. And so sometimes seeing how, I mean, definitely steps forward have been made, but also sort of, you know, because like we're so set in the ways in which we think about how we have to move through the world. And it's also sort of quite sobering to go back and see sort of, you know, like
how these people survive and worked with it at the same time as pushing back. But I think the pushback now is what you're trying to say is a lot stronger.
Yes.
All right. Thank you very much. Amanda Lee Koh there and her book, Delayed Rays of a Star. You can get this book. It's very interesting synopsis of this book that you shared with us. And I'm really, you know, they should make this into a movie. I think. It'd be so nice to see the settings back in Berlin and Paris and Hollywood back then. Amanda, thank you very much for coming in this Friday. Amanda Lee Koh, author of Delayed Rays of a Star. Go look for it in your favorite bookstore.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SPH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.